Well, now we all know that Halloween is October 31st, and whatever day that falls on in any particular year, that's the day we celebrate Halloween. And the little kids go out at night and they do their little thing on whatever night it happens to be. Well, sometimes that's on a Monday or a Tuesday or a Thursday, and the little kids have school the next day. And a lot of people are beginning to say, hey, isn't there a better thing we can do? Isn't there a better way? Well, all of a sudden, a group of people, they're trying to get signatures right now to change the legal date for Halloween to be the last Saturday of October. It's not a bad idea. But in a moment, we're going to check in with Mitch Horowitz as we talk about all things occult with him, including should we change the date of Halloween? And as a matter of fact, when we take calls with you next hour, regardless of your questions for Mitch, I'd like to know what you think about changing the date of Halloween from October 31st to the last Saturday of the month. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. And rest assured, if they change the date of Halloween to the last Saturday of the month, we will have Ghost to Ghost on that Saturday, so don't worry about that. Let me tell you a little bit about Mitch Horowitz, a widely known voice of esoteric ideas. Mitch is a writer in residence at the New York Public Library. He's a lecturer in residence at the University of Philosophical Research in Los Angeles. He is a Penn Award-winning author of a number of books. He has written on everything from The War on Witches to The Secret Life of Ronald Reagan for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, and others. And, of course, appears quite regularly here on Coast to Coast. Mitch, welcome to the show.
Delighted to be here. Thank you, George.
Give me your thoughts and reactions of the possibility of changing the date of Halloween from October 31st, which kind of has a nice little image all to itself,
yes,
to the last Saturday of the month. And I can understand why parents would like that, because the little kids got to get to school the next day.
Yeah, I do understand, because I'm a parent myself. I have two sons, and believe me, I know what it's like to take them out trick-or-treating when it's dark and the rain is starting to fall and they want to get in another hour before it's time for homework and so on. But I really oppose this move. I'm very much a traditionalist when it comes to Halloween. It's keyed to an ancient Celtic holiday. It means a great deal to those of us who believe in a search for an invisible world. 51% of millennials call it their favorite holiday. And I think at this point it's sacred. October 31st is one of those dates that's fixed in the public mind like July 4th. And I think we have to leave it be.
You would leave it be, huh?
I really would. I think that, again, as a working parent, I recognize the inconvenience that people experience sometimes. But in a way, it's all part of the fun. It's this oddball holiday that very often falls in the middle of the week. It gets dark early. And it feels like a very special time of year. There's a crackle in the air.
Oh, yeah.
People go to school in their costumes. And I'm a traditionalist on this count, George.
I would guess if they said the same thing about Christmas, it would be a disaster. Because, to me, Christmas is December 25th. I don't care what day of the week it falls on, it's December 25th. And if they said, no, we're gonna always have it the last Saturday of the month, it would lose that flavor, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. And, for a lot of people, they look at October 31st as a date of some of their happiest memories. And something that we may talk about later in the show, for some of us, it's also the date of our scariest memories. So the street runs both ways, but that date has a real emotional pull in the mind.
I always remember going trick-or-treating, and the guy across the street, I won't mention his last name. I don't even think he's alive anymore. But yeah, he would give everybody a penny.
Oh,
now,
yes.
Now, but back in 1960, a penny might have been, worth something, I guess. But still, we wanted candy, not a penny.
Oh, absolutely. And it hasn't changed. And, the Snickers company has vowed that they'll give away 1 million free Snickers bars if this date has changed. But the fact is, it's Snickers and some of the candy manufacturers who are actually behind the instigation of this petition. Because, they want to extend Halloween over the weekend to sell more candy, more costumes. So there's a commercial impetus at the back of this petition as well.
Well, that's an interesting take. I hadn't thought of that.
Beyond
just the children and the school situations, the next morning, there's got to be some money made here if it's carried over into the weekend.
Oh, for sure. Our holidays are all, commercialized beyond belief, and that's never going to change. I mean, it's funny, you know, we'll start seeing Halloween advertisements probably in about 2 weeks. But to commercialize it even further by extending it out over the course of a weekend, you know, it kind of goes against the stated motives of the petitioners. They want to make it more convenient for parents, which I understand, and I really do get that. But there were also candy and costume manufacturers behind the petition who just figure, hey, this is a way to create 2 days of trick-or-treating rather than one if we move it to a weekend.
That's true. Now, tell us a little bit about the roots of Halloween, because it wasn't all fun and happy stuff.
No, it really wasn't. Halloween, in its earliest form, is an ancient Celtic holiday that went under the name of Samhain. And it was a celebration that was intended to mark the end of the planting season. It was a time of year to move animals into corrals or into barns to gather in all your crops. And it was also a time of year to contact the ancestors. It was believed that this night, roughly timed to our October 31st, was a night during which the veil that separates the physical world from the spiritual world was at its thinnest point, and that you could contact departed ancestors. And this holiday was absolutely sacred for hundreds and hundreds of years in the Celtic culture, and that forms the basis for our own modern holiday of Halloween.
Mitch, since we've been talking about this for years with you, about the occult and things like that, have you seen any change in, you know, attitudes toward the unusual, the scary, or are they the same that they've always been?
I am seeing a change. I'm seeing more and more people are willing to talk about near-death experiences, angelic visits, precognitive dreams or clairvoyant dreams, and I think people are starting to understand that these experiences are a lot more common in our culture than has previously been talked about. And I think, I mean, this is not news to the Coast family. Your listeners talk about these things. They understand these things as part of our day-to-day lives. And I think what we're finding is that that's making a change in the culture. We're seeing people freely talk about these things. We're seeing a presidential candidate, Marianne Williamson, who came out of the New Age culture. Donald Trump himself, you know, came out of that culture to some degree, insofar as when he was a kid, he and his family were very dedicated to the positive thinking teachings of Norman Vincent Peale. So what we call a cult and New Age, it really has gone mainstream. We don't always see it because it's in front of us every day, and it's become a basic part of life.
Mitch, I haven't talked to you since we lost Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Did you know her?
I knew her only distantly. I recognized her as a greatly prolific and intrepid journalist. I know she was very widely loved, and she's very deeply missed.
Oh, my gosh. I started with her back in 1996 when I was doing my local Nighthawk show here in St. Louis. I was in a bookstore looking for paranormal guests for the show, and I was just looking for great stuff, and I came across the Encyclopedia of Dreams by Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and I went, gosh, this is cool. Somebody who could interpret dreams. And so she started off as my local guest on the Nighthawk show. And then when I started doing Coast to Coast on a regular basis, I talked to our executive producer, Lisa Lyon, and Tom Danheiser, and said, hey, I want to bring Rosemary along on Coast to Coast. And they said, yeah, give it a try. And she was just spectacular. And God, do I miss her.
She was one of the greats, and she must have written, I'm guessing, close to 50 books, and these books are going to live on for a very, very long time.
Absolutely. She wrote Talking to the Dead with Me, where she did most of the work, and you know, I provided her the impetus, the outline, and things like that, but she did all the legwork and gets credit for that, too. She deserves it, but she will be missed indeed. We're going to do a tribute show in the not-too-distant future, Mitch, to her, and you know, she deserves it. She deserves it.
I'm glad to hear that. She does indeed. And it's important that her books remain out there. And I think those books are going to last for generations.
Absolutely. How did you get involved in the occult?
It started when I was a kid, George. You know, I was growing up in the borough of Queens in New York City. And I would always take out these books of folklore and Pennsylvania Dutch superstition and mythology from the local public library. And I remember one day I was looking in a book of Pennsylvania Dutch folklore, and there was a pentagram in this book, the five-pointed star. Yeah. And it provided this kind of table, almost like a Ouija board, where you could bring down a pin and it would tell your fortune. I closed my eyes, I brought down a pin, and my fortune was a letter, so that a letter was supposed to arrive the next day. And the next day, a letter did arrive for me at our house. I was 9 years old. It was an overdue book notice from the local public library. Was absolutely correct, and I suppose it got me hooked ever since.
What do you think of Ouija boards, Mitch?
You know, I used to discourage people from using them because I thought it could be a very, very dangerous doorway to the subconscious or to the other side. But the truth is, as I get older, I revisit that view because a lot of good things have come out of Ouija boards as well. You know, the third most popular religion in Vietnam is a religion called Cao Daoism. It ranks right behind Catholicism and Buddhism. That was a religion that was channeled through a Ouija board.
Wow.
The Cao Dai religion supported American troops in Vietnam right up until the end of the war. They were some of America's loyalist allies, and the Cao Dai movement was repressed for many years by the communist government. Now they're reviving. But that was a religious movement, very pro-American, favored the French and American forces in Vietnam, that came through a Ouija board. So there are things that come through Ouija that can be very meaningful and powerful in our world.
I never have really taken the Ouija boards plunge yet. Years ago, I was going to do a show on Ouija boards with a live demonstration, and I had several guests, including Rosemary, in there, yes. Jordan Maxwell, Dr. Bruce Goldberg, and we polled people. And Rosemary was all for it. Jordan Maxwell says he'd get up and leave, and Bruce was on the fence. I decided to cancel the show, and we went to a different subject that night. And I got to tell you, I got a lot of emails from people, Mitch, who were very upset because they were ready with pizza parties and all this stuff. They went out and got Ouija boards. And they were going to do their own thing, and I canceled it for one reason, and the reason was I did not want to be responsible for anything that happened to people who were doing their Ouija board stuff based on my show. If they want to do it on their own, that's their business. But if they had little Ouija boards by the radio and listened to the things we were doing, I didn't want to be responsible for that. So I dropped the show.
Yeah, I understand that. There are scary and frightening things that come through the Ouija board. There was a woman who was telling me several years ago that she was writing a review of a new Ouija board for a New Age magazine, and she left the Ouija board around the house, not thinking anything of it. She started to get these threatening phone calls at work, and the police tapped the phone to determine the source of the calls. They were coming from her own house.
Ooh.
Her son. Yeah, it was her son in this morbid voice making the phone calls, and he had been playing around with the Ouija board, and she felt he experienced some kind of possession or something like that.
I had a bad experience with the Ouija board on the air on my local show, and we had a Ouija board in the studio. We had been given it as a gift, and I'm in the studio doing my show, not on Ouija boards. It just happened to be in the studio with me. Mm-hmm. Everything is going wrong technically. Things never went wrong. It was always a clean studio. But the the commercials, we would run the commercials at the time on like 8-track tapes. They weren't all computerized as they are today. And the cart machines would jam up. The audio board where we control the audio of phone callers and me and stuff like that started going on the blink. Everything went wrong. I finally told my producer at the time, his name was Howard Morton. I said, Howard, get rid of this thing. Take this board out of the studio now. As soon as he did, Mitch, everything started working. The board started working. The cart machines were fine. Everything was fine. And then after the show, I said, that was the weirdest experience, Howard, I've ever had. What'd you do with the Ouija board? Figure he was going to throw it in the garbage or something. He said, I gave it to Daryl. Well, Daryl was one of our news guys at the time. And lo and behold, like a day after Daryl had the Ouija board, he got fired.
Wow.
And then we ran into him about a week later, and he had broken up with his girlfriend in a bad breakup. Everything was going wrong with them. We told him to get rid of the Ouija board, and his luck changed after that. So,
no kidding.
I stay away from those things.
Well, I'll tell you, George, this may sound like a crazy proposition given these stories that we've been exchanging, but it's not too late. You could do a Ouija board show on Halloween, October 31st. I have an antique Ouija board.
Oh, man. I don't know, Mitch.
Talk to Tom about it. I'll do whatever he says.
Would you think that would be in conflict with what I did years ago and decided not to do it?
No.
Would that make me a hypocrite?
No, you'd say, hey, we're going to look at the other side of the coin, folks. I made a judgment call a few years ago. Not everybody liked it. Now we're going to revisit it. Might be an interesting way to just give a part two to the episode.
I have one guest who loves Ouija boards, Karen Dullman, and she swears by these things. I mean, just swears by them. And you know what? Things seem to be working well for her.
It's very interesting. You know, there's a series of channel teachings called the Seth teachings. Probably these are popular among some of your listeners.
Yeah.
There was a poet named Jane Roberts who channeled the Seth teachings.
That's right.
Board. You know, there are scary episodes that happen and meaningful episodes that happen. It's a lot like being online. You never quite know what you're going to get.
You've said that Halloween could be our next big religious holiday. Explain that.
I really do believe that. You know, Halloween is actually recognized as a religious holiday within the U.S. military because there are a lot of folk in different branches of the military who are witches, Wiccans, pagans, druids, and the U.S. Army Chaplain's Handbook actually lists Halloween, October 31st, as a sacred holiday, which it is. The folks who practice Wicca or modern-day versions of witchcraft, a lot of them are in the military, and they do their part, and they deserve the recognition of their holidays. Now, the military is often a bellwether of religious freedom, because it's actually very diverse religiously, the U.S. military. So if it's being recognized in the military, this may start to happen more and more in school districts or other precincts of life in our civilian world. And I think it's really something to watch. There's a big rise in the number of people who claim Wicca or witchcraft or neo-paganism as their religious affiliation. And many of those folk, myself included, regard Halloween as a sacred holiday.
You know, it's amazing how Hollywood has destroyed the image of witches for people. You know, Wiccans are good people. I mean, they're God-loving people. They believe in a male-female gender of God, and they're heartwarming, and they're caring people. Yet, when you look at Hollywood and you hear the word witches, you think of the Wizard of Oz and black magic and all this other stuff. And I think people have confused witches with Satanism, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Most of the people who practice witchcraft are practicing nature-based religions. They're trying to revive the old ways of some of our ancient ancestors. They're librarians, they're school teachers, they're accountants, they're police officers. They're people that we depend on and encounter every day. And their beliefs are constitutionally protected. They're very ethical, and they deserve respect.
Did you know that devil backwards is lived?
No, I didn't know that. That's the first time I'm hearing that.
Isn't that weird?
That is interesting.
I wonder what that means.
Yeah, I'm going to have to reflect on that. I've never heard that before.
I mean, evil backwards is live or live, however you want to pronounce it, but the devil backwards is lived.
That's very interesting.
Let's talk about the devil when we come back. Can you do that?
Happy to, George.
All right. Mitch Horowitz with us. His website is his name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He's got many books out there. You can get them off his website or just go to Amazon and put in his name, Mitch Horowitz, and all his books will pop up there, too. But we'll continue talking about Halloween and the devil and witches and things like that in just a moment. Next hour, we will take your phone calls with Mitch right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We're back with Mitch Horowitz as we talk about the occult and Halloween and all that great stuff. We'll take calls next hour with Mitch. And also, I would like you, when you call in and you get on, just tell me yes or no before we get into your question or your story, if you prefer to have Halloween as the last Saturday of the month, because there is a grassroots effort underway to try to get that done. Mitch, I've had a number of guests on the air who do not believe in the devil. There's no question there's evil out there, but they don't think there's a devil. What do you think?
Well, it's an interesting question, George. I do believe there is an opposing force in life. I don't necessarily think it's a negative force or an evil force. There's always going to be a yin and yang or polarity in all creation. And I think that the snake in the garden, who we meet in Genesis 3, really comes as somebody who, in a way, is the rebel, is the usurper, is the romantic, is the anti-hero. And he kind of completes the creation of humanity because he gives humanity intellect and creativity and the ability for measurement. But with all that also comes friction. That may be the price that we pay for being fully creative, intelligent beings. And so I think all these different forces play a part in creation. That's my perspective on it.
What about fallen angels and things that you find in Genesis?
I'm very interested in all that. You know, some of my friends apply the ancient alien theory to what we call fallen angels. Other people take it literally, and some of us think of fallen angels as kind of anti-heroes, followers of this opposing force who educated mankind, but also with that education came a lot of friction.
How many books do you have out there now, Mitch?
Oh, boy, it must be a dozen at this point, George, and more on the way. I'm always working.
Do you have a favorite?
Yes, I really do. As a matter of fact, it may be a surprise to some people to hear me say this, but my favorite is the second book I wrote. It's called One Simple Idea, and it's a history and analysis of the positive thinking movement. There's a lot of practical exercises in it, but it's a favorite work of mine. And I've got a lot of books out there that I've talked about on the show, Occult America, The Miracle Club. I love them all. I hate to choose a favorite, but if I have to, it's One Simple Idea. And it's a history of positive thinking, but it also gives exercises and ideas and methods.
Why does positive thinking work? Because we both know it does.
We really do. We know it does. And I think we've seen enough evidence and testimony to support that. I think it works, George, because what's going on in our lives is that linear time is probably an illusion, a very necessary illusion that we need to get through life. But everything is infinite. Everything is going on at once. And like people taking measurements in a particle lab, we take measurements also. We take them through our perspective, through our emotions, through our five senses. And I do believe that what we choose to assume is there is true. What we give our attention and energy to localizes or actualizes that experience in our lives from among an infinitude of possibilities. We call it positive thinking. It could just as easily be called deliberative thinking. The thing that you set your mind on is going to become local in your life.
Negative thinking also has an incredible effect on us, doesn't it?
Oh, for sure. I see it all the time. And look, I see it in myself. And one of the things I challenge people to do, and I challenge myself to do as I say these words, is take a look at how much of our inner talking, our talking to ourselves within our heads, really comes down to complaining. You know, we're frustrated about the delivery man being slow or bad service on the supermarket checkout line or frustrated with a coworker. We spend a tremendous amount of our internal headspace complaining. And if we could try to interrupt that pattern for even just a half hour, just a short period of time, it's a really fascinating experiment to see what else changes in your outer life.
I'm getting lots of emails from people telling me not to do the Ouija board show, Mitch.
Oh, no kidding. You know, where's all the people who were unhappy when you canceled it? You know, it seems like it's not easy to satisfy everybody, but I know a lot of people have negative associations with the Ouija board. Probably some of the callers will have some very scary stories associated with it.
Of everything that you've investigated in the paranormal, what scares you the most?
You know, George, to be honest, the one and only thing that scares me is that there is nothing else there, that there's nothing sort of beyond our motor functions and cognition. There's no invisible world. I don't believe that's true. I feel absolutely certain that there's an invisible world, but none of it scares me. I'm never frightened to confront reality. I want to have experiences. The one and only thing that scares me is, wow, could the materialists be right? Are we really just flesh and bone? And when we pass away, our thoughts pass away with us, everything that we are. I don't believe that's true, but that's the only prospect that actually scares me.
I found you, Mitch, over the years to be very spiritual. We don't get into religion, but you're very spiritual. What are your thoughts on how this all started, the universe, the Big Bang. Where have you headed on that?
You know, the best explanation I've found that seems to satisfy both science and spirituality is that ultimately the arbiter of everything that is intelligence, is one infinite mind, and we're each inlets of that mind, which is why we're able to create within our own physical realm, within our own framework, as this higher infinite mind is able to create on a cosmic scale. I think that we see evidence over years and years and years of research that there is a non-material reality. There is a reality that doesn't play according to the mechanical rules that we live with. And when one even ponders what the infinite is, what it means for the universe to be infinite and ever expansive, you have to ultimately come to a non-material solution of that question, or at least a working theory. And that brings us to the existence of one great intellect. And I think that's where everything emerged from.
It's pretty remarkable how it all works, isn't it?
It is. And boy, you know, even as I speak these words, I realize that I'm just on my knees peeking through a keyhole, you know, trying to figure out what's out there in this vast world. It's just a theory, but we have to have theories, so at least we have something that we can measure one another's experience and commonalities by.
Back to Halloween, what are some of the occult practices tied in with Halloween, Mitch?
You know, there was a really wild practice that's been discontinued that used to be popular down south and in the Midwest, and that was called the Dumb Supper.
The Dumb Supper.
Yeah, it was very creepy and weird. What would happen is a group of girls would get together, and they would make a vow to set a table for dinner, all the while going backwards, doing everything in reverse, and nobody was allowed to laugh. Nobody was allowed to make any noise, because if they did, the spell would be broken. So in silence, young women in the South and Midwest would arrange these dumb suppers where they would set a dinner table backwards. Then they would all sit down on one side of the table, and at the stroke of midnight, seated on the other side of the table, they were supposed to see the man that they would marry. And if a girl didn't see the man that they would marry, that was supposed to be a harbinger of an early death. So it was a very creepy evening. Jeez. And I read an account of one of these dumb suppers being conducted in West Virginia in 1958. Popularity started to fade in the 60s. That was a really wild practice that used to be widespread.
Was the prospective husband at that dinner, or did they have to conjure him up?
They would conjure him up. He would appear as a vision. So the young woman would have a clairvoyant vision, and she would see the image of the man that she was going to marry. But if no image appeared, the belief was that it was an omen of an early death.
Have you ever met a witch you didn't like?
Never. I have never once met a witch I didn't like. Every witch I've ever met is a warm, ethical, remarkable person.
Well, I was doing my Beyond Belief TV tapings a few weeks ago. We had Fiona Horn, the Good Witch from Australia, and
yes.
She's a pilot. And, of course, I asked her if she flies a broom or not.
she must get that a lot.
But again, how could you not like her, you know?
Yeah. No, it's a wonderful question. I've never met a witch I didn't like. And by the way, you know, the broom mythology is fascinating because it takes on different forms in different parts of the world. There's a tradition in Africa called jumping the broom, and a bride and groom are supposed to jump over a broom at their wedding. And if one of them can't jump over it, there's supposed to be some sort of a demon or an evil spirit, only disguised as the bride or the groom. So jumping the broom is supposed to expose an evil spirit.
My exposure to a witch on a broom was The Wizard of Oz when I was younger. But I assume the people who put the movie together knew about that before that.
Oh, sure. Frank Baum, who wrote the original novel, The Wizard of Oz, on which the movie was based, was deeply into the occult and mythology. He was a theosophist. These folks were very steeped in this kind of subject matter.
We're with Mitch Horowitz, his website, MitchHorowitz.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Like he said, he's got about a dozen books out there and more to come. What are you working on now?
I'm working on a new book called Secrets of Self-Mastery, and that is going to come out in January of 2020. I'm finishing that up right now. It's really I hope, a very powerful, practical book that gives you some very, very simple ideas, which, if acted on, can really enact a revolution in your sense of self-respect and in the events of your life.
And again, we'll take calls with Mitch next hour about Halloween or the occult. But definitely, when you get on with me, tell me if you favor moving the date of Halloween from October 31st, whenever it falls, to the last Saturday of the month, which could be October 28th. It could be October 31st. It could be any of those dates. But it would always be on the last Saturday of October. Like, I believe Thanksgiving is always, what, the last Thursday of the month in November,
right? Yes, that's right.
Now, that worked out okay.
That worked out okay, but it never had one of those special dates attached to it, like July 4th or October 31st. And, of course, October 31st is roughly dated to when the original Celtic holiday was celebrated. So it has a sacred resonance for some.
Well, the next thing they're going to want to do is change New Year's Eve to the last Saturday of December. You know,
why not?
that just won't work.
Right. It'd be convenient, but it would confuse everybody. Yes.
Well, you know, everybody generally has New Year's Day off. We go live with shows on that day. As a matter of fact, this coming 2020, December 31st, 2019 is right during the middle of the week, I think, and then we've got the New Year's Day show, so I'll be live on both of those nights, Mitch. But generally, most people have New Year's Day off, so it doesn't matter when New Year's Eve pops for them, does it?
I suppose that's true, although I imagine if it were held tucked away conveniently during a weekend, somehow there would be an expansion of it over the course of 2 days, which would mean the sale of more champagne and noisemakers and other things. And I suspect, you know, that's part of what the motive is behind moving Halloween, because a Saturday holiday really becomes a weekend holiday. And sometimes that serves just to commercialize something more.
See, restaurants, for example, do not like it when New Year's Eve falls on a Friday, Saturday, because they've got big business on those days anyway.
Right, right. The off day is what makes it special.
That's right. They want it on a Monday or a Tuesday when it's slow anyways, and you know, people go out, and so they get an added bonus there.
Yes, yes. No one wants a holiday on a day off. We want a holiday to be something special that interrupts the conventional.
What do you think of Aleister Crowley?
Well, he was a great artist. He was a great spiritual pioneer, but a lot of people around him did get hurt. And we're talking, of course, about the early 20th century British occultist who called himself the Great Beast, called himself the wickedest man in the world. He liked to provoke people. He liked to provoke the press. I think he was a great artist. I think he was a great intellect. I don't know that he was a good man. A lot of his disciples and students got hurt. And if Crowley were alive today, I don't think I would seek to be one of his students.
What about Anton LaVey?
Anton LaVey was a remarkable figure. Now, of course, you're talking about the so-called Black Pope, the man who founded the Church of Satan in 1966.
Yeah, now that was a kind of a weird guy.
Well, I'll tell you this, George. I used to write off Anton LaVey. In fact, I don't even include him in my book, Occult America. I regarded him as sort of a showman, a carnival artist.
Not really? Okay.
A serious occultist. But I was wrong. I was wrong. You know, I came to realize in recent years that he was a great magician. He was a great intellect. He was a great artist. He informed a lot of our culture in terms of style and aesthetics. And I have a whole new view of Anton, and I think he was an extraordinary and original thinker.
If you wrote another book today on the occult, would you include him?
Oh, I would absolutely. In fact, eventually I plan to do an anniversary edition of Occult America, and I want to include a new afterword that talks about Anton and that recognizes the contributions he made. He was really a remarkable artist and provocateur and thinker.
Is there anybody else out there now like those folks?
No, not that I can see. I don't think we live in an age of great teachers today. And I've talked about this with several people, several co-seekers on the path. We don't have many people who, in their individual personality, really shake up or upend the culture today or provide some sort of dramatic teaching. But we do have enormous amounts of information. We do have communities online and face-to-face, and we can pursue these things in group settings which may serve to heighten some of the energy that we're able to bring to the search. But I don't think we live in an age of great teachers right now.
Do you think social media has minimized things like this, Mitch, and that's why we don't have what we used to have in the old days?
That's a great question. In the old days, we had no choice but to get together face-to-face.
You'd have to go see him or hear him or something
like
that.
Exactly, exactly. I think you're making a really good observation. That may be one of the reasons why we have become a more isolated society, why we don't have individuals who seem capable of creating or forming around them a large nucleus of people. It may be that social media has replaced the idea of the group or the student circle. It may be why these things are dwindling.
That could be. That could be indeed. Mitch Horowitz with us. We're going to come back and take phone calls with him. And again, regardless of your question or story, do tell us if you favor moving the date for Halloween from October 31st to the last Saturday of the month, regardless of what that date might be. It's going to be the last Saturday of the month. Give us your thoughts on that.